This week on Grape Encounters Radio.
I had to go barrel sample. I'm like, oh no, I don't like something. I make a face, and I was so surprised how good they were. And I really like Cab Franc. It's hard to find single variety.
I'll tell you, that also is one of the wines that really stood out to me. And also a wine that I think that people have yet to really discover en masse.
And now, transmitting our signal to wine lovers of the world from our Atascadero Wine Cellar Studio in the heart of the Central Coast wine country of San Luis Obispo County, California, we bring you Grape Encounters with David Wilson.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow, talk to me nice.
And it is time for your weekly Grape Encounter. Welcome aboard the good ship Grape Encounter. I am your humble wine captain, David Wilson, and I'll be steering the ship for the next hour. As a matter of fact, we're going to take you to some very interesting places today. One is a state that is making some absolutely terrific wines, and I guarantee you they're not on your radar. That coming up. But first, orange juice. You're saying orange juice. Why would you want to talk about orange juice, David Wilson? Well, it's because when I go to my favorite little boutique grocery store, there are four different orange juices there. There's the real cheap stuff from Concentrate. It's around $2 for a half gallon, and then a little pulp in it and maybe a little better quality. And that's getting around $3. For around $4, you can get the juice that has never been frozen. And then for $10, you get the really good stuff. And I never want to buy that. It's in the plastic half-gallon jug, right? I just think $10 for orange juice. Well, you know what? There's a difference between juices, and I'll bet you if I ever took the time to pour all of those side by side and taste them, that I would never buy anything but the $10 juice again. That is the subject I want to dive into first here, is why juice makes a difference and why sometimes it's better to spend a little bit more. And I have the ambassador of flavor on the line, the sommelier of the people, my good friend Michael Jordan, not the basketball player. This guy's even more famous in the world of wine. Hey, MJ, you're in Hawaii, dude.
It's so great to be with you. I'm actually on the island of Kauai right now with some of my Jackson family cohort.
Now, tell me the exact title that you have over at the Kendall Jackson family.
I'm the director of global key accounts.
Are you drinking like pina coladas over there or what?
Well, we've been drinking some good Hawaiian rum and Mai Tais and things, but we actually were drinking a lot of good refreshing and crisp wines, too.
How about that Maui Blanc?
Yeah.
Well, have you had that pineapple wine?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, listen, Michael, you weren't expecting to be on Grape Encounters today, and we were having a conversation earlier, and I told you I really need your help with this particular subject because, you know, I've been telling people for years now that there are great bargains in wine. I'm starting to get more and more torqued by the fact that we're seeing, in my opinion, more bad wine than good being sold out there and disguised as something special because they come up with a clever label, they come up with a clever name, but it's really, these are oftentimes phantom wineries. They don't exist, and they make it look like they exist, but they don't. And I wanted your help in guiding people in making a decision and maybe being able to differentiate between the phantom wines. And I got a term for you, Michael. You might like this. Wines made from orphan juice.
Orphan juice. Phantom wineries making wine from orphan juice. I get it completely, and I understand exactly what you're saying. And for David, I'm so glad you bring this up because our folks listening, so many people out there haven't had even the good fortune of tasting a really delicious wine. Because there is so much wine out there that some, you know, it just doesn't taste good to you, whoever you are and whatever kind of wine you like. You only discover that by trying them. And not every single person likes every single type of wine. And here are a couple real truisms before we dig deeper into this. The most expensive bottle does not always taste the best to you. And certainly, if you're looking for good, inexpensive wine, sometimes the greatest value is not the lowest price wine, you know, because for the very, very, very lowest price, like you said about the orange juice, growing high-quality fruit costs a little money, and you can only make delicious wine from deliciously, perfectly ripened grapes that are grown with love and care. And so that costs a little bit more than growing hugely overcropped, giant areas of wine. What I mean by overcropping is just allowing the vines to throw as many clusters as possible because we need as many tons of fruit as we can, but you don't get all of that fruit perfectly right.
I don't think a lot of people understand two things. The first is that really good grape growers drop a lot of fruit. What I mean by that is they just go through the vineyard and they cut off a lot of fruit and let it drop to the ground so that the remaining fruit becomes luscious and delicious. The other thing that's really counterintuitive in winemaking is the fact that you would think as a consumer, wow, if the grapevines are producing lots and lots and lots of fruit, that must be good. And those are great grapevines. And in reality, the less fruit that's being produced by a vineyard usually means the better quality of wine. Am I wrong?
Higher quality. Yeah, those over like tons and tons. We rate and evaluate in the United States the harvest quantity by tons per acre. And super high-end, great, great quality wines are down around 2.5 to 3 tons per acre. Although we do have grapes that are so prolific, they could grow up to 6, 7, and almost 8 tons per acre. And the quality of the fruit as far as deliciousness, because I'm the ambassador of flavor, so this is what I relate to. On a 2.5, 3 ton per acre grape is going to be more intense, more flavor. And on the 6, 7, 8 tons of grapes per acre, you may even get green flavors and some unwanted flavors in there because it's not in balance. The fruit is not getting perfectly ripe. It's not.
Why are there suddenly so many wines being produced that are just phantom wines where, you know, the winery doesn't exist and, you know, they're putting it out under a lot of different labels, sometimes, you know, many times all with the same juice? Is that really necessary?
Well,
this is a trend that's getting really big right now.
Yeah, David, I think a lot of people really are attracted to the wine industry because they think it may be glamorous and prestigious in certain ways. And certainly there is some of that. It costs you so much money to start a winery, to plant a winery, or buy an existing winery. I mean, you're talking, you got to start with a lot of money to make a little bit of money in the wine industry. A lot of wineries, they grow fruit, and if the fruit isn't quite up to their standards, they're not going to make wine with that fruit. They'll make wine with the better fruit and then sell off the other stuff.
That's the cheap orange juice that I was talking about.
It's not even that cheap yet. Wait, there's a pecking order of fruit, you know. There's the primo top of the grade, and that goes in the very best wines, and then the stuff around the fringes of the vineyard that winemaker doesn't want to use still could be very good. We're not talking garbage yet here. That goes into other very good wines, and they sell that to other wineries, and they use that for their wines. There are other vineyards that, like, whoa, this stuff didn't ripen up, or it overcropped, or there's issues with it, and that stuff is then sold off to others that may be making huge amounts of bulk wine or little amounts of wine with their own special labels on it. And then we even go farther. Sometimes they crush that stuff and they just sell off the already fermented juice because it doesn't pass the muster to be included into a winery's wine. This juice that we've pressed and fermented, ooh, either it may be flaw or there may be something just not good enough about it to put in our A or B or C grade wines, and we're just going to sell it off.
And then worse, then the person who's making the wine or at least bottling it will add all kinds of garbage to it.
Well, there's additives that can be added, you know, and then there's other ways.
And concentrates.
Really inexpensive wine. Super, super inexpensive wine. There are companies that, or people out there that make wine out of grape concentrate, like the orange juice concentrate. Well, that can't be probably in a really good, delicious, you know, high quality wine if you're making it out of concentrate. Just doesn't seem like it would to me. And then if you're making wine, if you put it in an oak barrel to age it, well, that costs a lot more than adding a bunch of oak chips or sawdust into a big vat to get the oak flavor in the wine. There are many things that can be done to lower the cost of wines and make them very inexpensively. And those, a lot of these guys are the what you call the phantom winery, making wine out of the orphan juice that this winery declassified and sold off at potato prices.
Tell listeners how they can hedge their bet a little bit against buying the phantom labels made from orphan juice. What gyrations do we go through to make sure that you're not being taken?
When you're looking for really good value, like on the, we are not really spending a lot of money on a bottle of wine, but you want to make sure you get something good, I say you go with the tried and true. Those folks that have had consistency over the years and high ratings on their inexpensive wines year in and year out, you can trust that, because we all need good everyday drinking wine. You can't spend $100 on a bottle of wine for lunch and dinner every day. You need good inexpensive wines to drink all day every day if you want to drink with lunch and dinner. And so go with trusted names, I think. And then for fun and for folly, buy that really random thing you've never heard of or seen before because it has such a cute label, or it's so cool, or it's a really, really ridiculously low price, and just try one bottle. Try it. And then if you really like it, well, then you scored. You found something new.
Thanks very much to MJ for taking a little breather from your pina colada there in Hawaii. Check out the Jackson family of wines. Great talking to you, Michael.
Thank you, David. Take care now.
Stay with me. Coming up next, it's Moya Schatz Dolesby. She's the executive director of the Idaho Wine Commission. Your Grape Encounter continues with David Wilson. Stay with us.
Grape Encounters is 100% is state grown. We have, however, removed the pretentiousness and added a healthy dose of fun.
Talk about the adventure of a lifetime. Our listener trip aboard Region Seven Seas is a Grape Encounter that I will never, ever forget. And the folks who made this magical journey possible are Sterling Travel. I don't know of any travel agency that does a better job when it comes to creating unforgettable experiences. At Sterling Travel, they focus on excursions that are simply second to none. That's why they work with companies like Regent Seven Seas to make sure that your Sterling Travel experience takes you to incomparable destinations and immerses you in exceptional service that totally exceeds your expectations. Before, during, and after your trip, they're with you all the way, making sure that your vacation is completely and totally off the chart. They have all kinds of adventures waiting for you, and the best way to learn more about what Sterling Travel can do for you is to log on to SterlingTravelInc.com. That's SterlingTravelInc.com. Tell them you heard about it on Grape Encounters Radio.
This is the time of year when wine lovers start planning their pilgrimage to California's wine regions. The perfect inspiration and companion is the California Directory of Fine Wineries. Featured are profiles of dozens of Central Coast and Northern California wineries, along with hundreds of color images by renowned photographer Robert Holmes. Plus, highlights of tours, tastings, maps, and events. These beautiful directories make a fantastic gift. Be sure to like the California Directory of Fine Wineries Facebook fan page for wine country news and events each week. Click on the link at GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
If you have a thirst for wine knowledge, be it trivia or the latest trends, there's a website that's overflowing with content that we've created just for you. It's GrapeEncounters.com, where you'll find literally hundreds upon hundreds of stories and interviews covering almost every topic imaginable. From the world's most colorful and renowned winemakers to unforgettable wine adventures, there's something for every wine lover at GrapeEncounters.com. Go ahead, log on, uncork, pour, swirl, and sip.
He's back, and he's not alone. Your Grape Encounter continues with David Wilson and a little help from his friends.
Oh, not at home.
About 2 years ago, we gave some love to the Idaho Wine Commission because I got to tell you, I had not been familiar with the wines of Idaho, as I imagine a lot of you are not. And there are very few things that have excited me as much as the ensemble of wines that I tasted from Idaho. I had a chance then to catch up with Moya Schatz Dolesby, who is the executive director of the Idaho Wine Commission. It's been a while, and I have been wanting to get Moya on. She's just about to take off to the Wine Bloggers Convention. So I'm glad we were able to catch you, Moya, and it just keeps going and going in Idaho.
Yes, it does. Pretty exciting here in Idaho. We're doing a lot, and it's pretty fascinating. And we have 51 wineries right now, believe it or not.
And to a lot of people, that doesn't sound like a lot, especially to listeners in California, where there's that many on one street corner. But
exactly. Yes, it's true. But in 2002, there was 11 wineries. So if you look at it in that perspective, it's amazing to see the difference.
It's quality, not quantity, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Because it's one of these things that I have really been very down on is that, and it's not in any way to diss any of the great wine regions of the world, but a lot of times you will taste wines or buy wines at usually an inexpensive price from a well-known wine AVA, only to be sorely disappointed and only to find that that whatever $15 a bottle of wine tastes exactly like the next and the next and the next and the next. It's like, and it's all very mediocre. And
right.
What I found very exciting about the tasting that I did with you was the fact that I went from one bottle to another, from one varietal to another. And do you remember the look on my face? I was just like, I was stunned at how good those wines were, and I even came back and tried more. And this was an event that had a whole lot of good wine at it. So it was really a remarkable epiphany for me at just how good things are up in Idaho. And again, not quantity, it's quality. And I think if people have not had a chance to try Idaho wines, they gotta get into it.
Oh, definitely. What I've been saying lately too, you know, Idaho wine isn't for everybody. It's for someone who's looking for something new that tastes really darn good. And I think when you say that to a wine person, then they're for sure want to go out there. And
wait a second, Moya. If it's not for everybody and it tastes pretty darn good, then I'm going to say it's for everybody.
Yeah, we could say that.
For those of you who love crummy wine, forget about Idaho.
Exactly. It makes people think a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I still remember you like trying those wines, and it was what's so exciting for me when I go to these wine tastings is it really does surprise people. And yeah, there's some awesome wines coming out of the state of Idaho because we can grow great grapes here, and it starts the grapes. You can't have to have great grapes in order to make awesome wine. And we do. We're a high mountain desert. And I mean, believe it or not, I mean, we only have 1,200 acres planted currently.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and that's actually probably one of the biggest hurdles in Idaho right now is we need to plant more grapes.
Wait a second. Grapes? I thought the Idaho wines were made from potatoes.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No. Grapes? Oh, my gosh. You guys have the funniest video. It is hysterical. I don't know whether the Idaho Wine Commission actually produced it or...
We did.
Oh, my gosh.
We hired a marketing company to help us.
Take people through that video because and tell them where to see that because as wine videos go, this is one of the absolutely most hysterical videos you will ever watch.
Well, thank you. So the gist of the video, it's called Idaho More Than Just Wine. And Idaho, everyone knows that Idaho is known for potatoes. And so I wanted to put a spin on that because, well, embrace it. The Idaho Potato Commission has done an amazing job marketing potatoes in the state of Idaho. So why shun that? Let's see it as a good thing. And so we hired actors to talk about how Idaho is only known for, you know, wine this, wine that. And Idaho is not known for, you know, the potato farmer talking about how he's disgruntled because all other people want to talk about when he travels the world is Idaho wine. Well, he drinks beer and he's a potato farmer. Doesn't anybody know that Idaho does potatoes?
It gets tiring. Everywhere I go, even when I travel, whether I'm in New York, Chicago, France, Iowa, Northern California, people just assume I make wine. They say things like, oh, you're from Idaho. You must work at a winery. Or, oh, you're from Idaho. What's your favorite wine? I don't have a favorite wine. I drink beer. I'm a beer guy.
You can go to YouTube or our website and you just do Google the Idaho More Than Just Wine. And it's pretty hilarious. And we're hopefully going to do another one as well.
I hope you do. It's really good. And it makes the point very, very well. And it's kind of an interesting spin on promoting a product that really isn't all that well known. You guys do some very interesting events, too. I think there's one called Sippin' in the City.
Yeah, we try to think outside the box and only plan events that we want to go to. Because if I don't want to go to it, how am I supposed to convince you that you should come?
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
Sippin' in the City is we remove the tables. So the wineries walk around and pour. And it's more informal on a Thursday or a Friday evening. And you just walk around. The wineries walk around. You walk around. You try different wine. It's not... I wanted to remove the intimidation because I don't know about you. Like sometimes I still even get a little intimidated when I go up to a prominent winery and, hey, can I try some wine? I mean, they don't know who I am. Or maybe I should just have more confidence.
So the wineries actually walk around with the wine and say, hey, would you like to try this?
And it's good for the wineries, too, to get out from their table and get out of their safe zone.
I think it's an absolutely great idea. Okay, when we come back, I want to talk about varietals. I want to talk about the kind of elevations and terrain where the wine is grown. And then most importantly to listeners, where they can find Idaho wines.
Sure.
Fair enough. We're talking to Moya Schatz-Dolesby, who is the executive director of the Idaho Wine Commission. It's not just about potatoes anymore, folks. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters after this.
You're having a Grape Encounter with David Wilson. What a way to spend the day.
At Grape Encounters Radio, we've built a very special kind of cellar. It's where we keep our best years on hand for your enjoyment. Each week, David Wilson picks, stomps, ferments, and bottles conversation about your favorite beverage, and he does it with the most interesting people in and around the business of wine. The topics, the history, the perspective, it's unlike anything else you'll find. Nearly 200 episodes of Grape Encounters at GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
Nestled right in between two world-class wine countries, Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo, the warm and inviting city of Atascadero is the perfect gateway to nearly endless wine country adventures. Cozy and oh-so-friendly, make historic Atascadero home base for adventures to hundreds of surrounding wineries, the nearby Pacific, and magical Hearst Castle, plus an amazing array of attractions from zip lining to delectable dining. Discover all that affordable Atascadero has to offer at visitatascadero.com.
If you're like many wine lovers, you just can't seem to part with those corks and the pile is growing. Turn that pile into style with an original cork cage holder from epicstyle.com. Dozens of shapes and styles from windmills to wine barrels. These cork cages are a smash hit with wine aficionados, and you've got to see them at epicstyle.com. Hundreds of items to add artistry and fun to any dinner or cocktail party. epicstyle.com. Find gifts and accessories for home entertaining.
Grape Encounters Radio is always on the lookout for great story ideas, even if they're completely and totally off the wall. So here's the deal. Share your story ideas with me or send a question you'd like to hear answered on the show. If I use your question or suggestion, I'll send you a special gift from epicstyle.com. I want to know what you want to know. You can contact me on the Grape Encounters Radio group page on Facebook or email david@grapeencountersradio.com. If you've got something for me, I've got something for you.
And now, Grape Encounters with David Wilson continues from our Central Coast San Luis Obispo County Wine Country Studio in Atascadero, California.
Don't forget the potato wine. Ah, potato wine.
We are back with Grape Encounters Radio, and today taking you to the great state of Idaho. And, you know, we like to move our microphones around the country. Well, actually, we're not moving our microphones, but through the miracle of Alexander Graham Bell, we're able to have on the phone with us today Moya Schatz-Dolesby, who is the executive director of the Idaho Wine Commission. And as I was saying earlier, or as you may have heard me say in some previous shows, if you're looking for some great wines and you want to step out of your comfort zone and try something that is really special, I mean really special. I can endorse Idaho wines with absolutely no problem whatsoever, because I will tell you that every single wine that I have tasted so far from Idaho was absolutely scrumptious. How's that for a sophisticated wine term?
That you're really good. Can I hire you to be our promoter? I mean, that was awesome. So
I am. Well,
you.
I'm doing it right now.
Yes.
You need to send me a dollar, though. Okay.
Yeah, that's true. That's
okay.
True.
So,
or wine, either or.
Yeah. We'll work for wine. Yeah.
Exactly. No. Yeah. Idaho is producing some phenomenal wines, and it's because we have a great growing region. We're a high mountain desert. A lot of times we get this misnomer in Idaho that we're the Great White North. I mean, I even did with my aunt yesterday. She said, doesn't it get really, really cold? I'm like, well, not really. It gets cold, but it gets cold gradually, so the grapes can go dormant, and it kills off disease and pests. So that's actually a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, our winters, mean, it can get down to 15 degrees, but that doesn't happen that often. And if it does, it will go there slowly. And what I mean by a high mountain desert is our elevation is between around 15 and 3,500 feet.
Yeah.
So it is up there. But we have great hot days, cool nights to get the balance of the sugars and acids.
So you're growing some of the highest elevation wines in the country, no doubt.
Yeah, probably. I mean, Denver's pretty high, Colorado too. But yeah, we're up there with them.
Yeah.
For sure.
So let's talk about varietals for a second, because I was equally surprised, not just with the quality, but the variety of wine that was coming from Idaho. Can you kind of shake it down in terms of production, maybe from lowest to highest or highest to lowest?
Oh, yeah. So we have a lot of vinifera varieties, all vinifera varieties. So Cab, Merlot, Riesling, Syrah. We're having a lot of success with Tempranillo right now.
Moya, that was the humdinger for me, was the Tempranillo. Was just why does it grow so wonderfully in Idaho? What's the story?
I think it's just the soil composition and probably the climate. I mean, it's a grape that grows extremely well in Spain, so similar parallel. I'm no scientist by any means, but it's doing extremely well, and I think that's why. But we're also seeing a lot of success with Riesling. I mean, we're producing some amazing. I mean, we have the sweet Rieslings, but some phenomenal dry Rieslings. And I don't know about you, I'm a huge Riesling fan, especially dry Riesling.
I am too, and that also was something that I was really taken aback by. With was the Rieslings. Of course, I love Washington Rieslings too.
And we're very similar to Eastern Washington.
Exactly. What about some of the high elevation varietals that, you know, come from South America? Are you growing any, for instance, Malbec? Some of those are grown at very high elevation?
We are, but just a little bit. I think we're going to see more come in because there's a demand for it. But as you know, it takes 3 to 5 years for a grape variety to come on after you plant it. So there's definitely some that's coming into production. But the biggest thing that we have is a lot of Rieslings planted here because Ste. Chapelle is our largest winery in the state, and they make a lot of Riesling. So we have to be able to produce that. But there's some phenomenal Rieslings out there. But we're also, Malbec, Tempranillo, Sangiovese, Petite Syrah, even Cab Franc. And we're actually, there's a newer kind of growing region. I shouldn't necessarily say newer because they started actually planting grapes up there in the 1860s in northern Idaho. It's the Lewis Clark Valley, and they're actually in the process of applying for an AVA right now. And hopefully that will come on board next year. But phenomenal Cabernet Franc, and just amazing up there.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first got to Idaho, I had to go barrel sample. I'm like, oh no, I don't like something. I make a face. And I was so surprised how good they were. And I really like Cab Franc, and it's hard to find single varieties.
So. I'll tell you, that also is one of the wines that really stood out to me. And also a wine that I think that people have yet to really discover en masse. You know, they certainly drink a lot of it in blends, but not necessarily as a single varietal.
Yeah, and I don't know why, if people aren't educated or just think of it as just a blend. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, you can grow most all of the Bordeaux varietals, then, I presume.
Oh, yeah, and all the Rhone varieties as well. I mean, we have, and it's just finding what grows well where.
Right.
You know, what is the slope and the elevation? I mean, I always tell people, try to find a south-facing slope because it does get cold. And so you do want that cold air to roll down the hill. I tell people, well, just do a test plot. I get calls every week. I want to plant this or that. Okay, plant tomatoes first. See what grows. So do a test plot. Don't go and plant 20 acres without doing a little research.
So where did you get your background?
I started with the Washington Wine Commission, actually. I was there for almost 5 years.
Right.
And I loved it in Washington. That's where I grew up, and I wasn't looking to leave, and I was offered this job here in Idaho, and it was basically, I was almost 26 years old, and it was too good to be true. So I left my friends and my family, and I went, and I've been here almost 6 years, which I can't believe it. I thought I'd be here
on. You stole a lot of intellectual capital from the state of Washington.
Washington. Yeah, they did a fabulous job training me.
And took it over to Idaho. Wow. I'll bet Washington is shaking in their boots right now.
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, look at Washington. They have over 750 wineries, I want to say.
You know, Washington does such an amazing job. And I'm always surprised at how economically priced the Washington wines are, as are a lot of the Oregon wines as well. And Idaho wine price points, I think, are pretty reasonable as well, right?
Oh, they are. They range between $6.99, and to up to probably $45 is what you can see. But what we're going to see happening in Idaho now is, especially as you see more of these wineries going to Washington and Oregon for planting, we're going to see, I think, some big growers coming to Idaho because land is affordable and we have access to water. Those are two really big things that are necessary to grow grapes.
Yeah, isn't it true that they're putting in a pipeline from Idaho to the Napa Valley?
That'd be great. Yes.
No. I mean to send your water that way.
Because
California certainly got water problems, especially down where our studios are on the Central Coast. And, you know, they can't even plant grapes here anymore, at least for a while, until we figure out what's going on.
Yeah. So what are people going to do? I mean, I don't know.
I guess they're going to drink Idaho wines.
That'd be great.
What are you doing really to promote the expansion of the Idaho wine industry?
We're doing a lot of, our budget's small, so we do a lot of grassroots. We travel and go to a lot of different conferences, talk to consumers. We're really big on the social media and try to have a really good website and presence and be responsive on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and that seems to be working for us. We're just now starting to do more of a national push that's coming into the forethought because I'm a big believer, before you can conquer the world, you have to conquer your own town and then your own state.
Right.
And it's just been in the last couple years that we've really been able to conquer our town, when I say Boise, Idaho, because that's where we live, and then broaden out into the state of Idaho, because that's the biggest, your local people are your biggest supporters. And it's great now when you can go into an Idaho restaurant and see Idaho wine on the list. It hasn't always been like that. I mean, I used to have to beg restaurants to carry Idaho wine, and now they want to, and it's because consumers are asking for it. When people are traveling, they say, what's your local wine? I mean, I do that. I was just in New York City, and I'm like, I wanted to try a Long Island rosé, and of course they had one. It was awesome. It was great, because you want to try, what does that state have to offer?
Yeah. So what are you doing in terms of trying to recruit more people to plant grapes in Idaho? And are you sneaking off to Washington from time to time and other places and saying,
oh yeah, whenever I travel, I talk to people about the affordability and I talk about water.
You do?
And you can see people, I'm really involved in Wine America, which is the legislative arm for all the wineries in the country. And I'm always talking about what we have access to. And you can see people's wheels turning because it's a serious problem. And especially the fact that we have such good quality here. It's a need. And I don't know what people in California are going to do because you can't really expand.
Have you seen a number of the better known winemakers in other states migrating, or at least opening up operations in Idaho, planting grapes there, making wines?
Yeah, Precept Brands, they're a big Washington company. They own the two largest Idaho wineries, actually. And we're seeing smaller wineries open up that people have, they've been in California or they've been in Oregon and Washington, and now they're starting an Idaho winery because it's so much more affordable. We have yet to see a big grower or winery come in. I just think it's a matter of time. I hear rumors and scuttle, but a lot of times these wineries and growers don't want the Idaho Wine Commission to know that.
What is holding them back? Is it just that they're waiting for the Idaho wines to become better known and Idaho to have a well-known reputation for making good wines? Is that the case?
Probably. And I think that's the cliche, that Idaho is the Great White North and that Idaho is known for potatoes. That's why we're trying to poke fun at ourselves and really start to educate journalists, wineries. And so it's telling the story over and over again. And that's fine. I mean, that's my job.
All right. Well, tell you what, I will make a commitment to drag the microphones up to Idaho.
Yes, please. We'd love to have you.
As soon as you've got a little time, we'll come on up there and we'll do a couple of shows from Idaho and give you a little hand in letting people know what's going on there. Because frankly, I think no matter what kind of wines you like, I think a true wine lover enjoys experiencing wines from all over the world. And, you know, we can't have too much wine in America, I don't think. We can't have too much good wine in America.
Exactly. Yes.
That's the deal.
I'll second that.
Yeah. So, you know, congratulations to you guys. For those who want to know more about wine and connect with the wineries and possibly get some Idaho wines into their cellars, what do they do?
The best thing to do is go to our website, idahowines.org, and you can peruse the other wineries that are available, or even check out on Facebook who we're talking about, and we're always listing who's won an award, who's been written up in an article, and that's a good qualifier. That's how kind of I like to get wines when I know can read a little bit about the wine from Wine Spectator or Wine Enthusiast, so that's what I would do.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many gold medals the Idaho winemakers are chalking up. It's really impressive. Moya, I so appreciate you coming on today and have fun at the Wine Bloggers Conference. Big thank you to Moya Schatz-Dolesby, the Executive Director of the Idaho Wine Commission. And you know what? Try some Idaho wines. I mean, you will not be disappointed. And if you are, preserve the bottle and ship it to me, and I'll drink the rest. Thanks, Moya.
Thank you.
You know the biggest problem that I had with Idaho wines the last time I tasted through a bunch of them? It was a dilemma of whether to spit or not to spit, because frankly, I didn't want to waste one single drop. I really love the wines from Idaho. And being the socially responsible wine taster that I am, I know that I've got to pace myself sometimes. And even though the wines are across the board really good and you want to savor every last drop of those wines, you know, if you're really going to enjoy the experience, you sometimes have to give up a little something, and that means doing a little spitting. It would be, I think, very fun to set up hidden cameras in wine bars and focus them on the spit bucket and look at the way different people spit. And then there are certain people that just absolutely will not spit out one drop of wine. It doesn't matter whether they like the wine or not. They feel like they're wasting wine if they don't swallow it. But you know what? You got to pace yourself and save yourself for the good stuff. After a while, all wine starts to taste the same. Well, people do some very strange things in very strange ways in tasting rooms. And there is certainly an etiquette that applies to all wine tasters. And that is going to be the subject of our next segment as we bring in Sarah Schneider, wine editor of Sunset Magazine. And we explore the do's and don'ts in the wine tasting room. So wine tasting etiquette is coming up next. Stay with me as your grape encounter continues.
If you're like many wine lovers, you just can't seem to part with those corks, and the pile is growing. Turn that pile into style with an original cork cage holder from epicstyle.com. Dozens of shapes and styles from windmills to wine barrels. These cork cages are a smash hit with wine aficionados, and you've got to see them at epicstyle.com. Hundreds of items to add artistry and fun to any dinner or cocktail party. EpicStyle.com. Find gifts and accessories for home entertaining.
Talk about the adventure of a lifetime. Our listener trip aboard Region Seven Seas is a grape encounter that I will never, ever forget. And the folks who made this magical journey possible are Sterling Travel. I don't know of any travel agency that does a better job when it comes to creating unforgettable experiences. At Sterling Travel, they focus on excursions that are simply second to none. That's why they work with companies like Regent Seven Seas to make sure that your Sterling Travel experience takes you to incomparable destinations and immerses you in exceptional service that totally exceeds your expectations. Before, during, and after your trip, they're with you all the way, making sure that your vacation is completely and totally off the chart. They have all kinds of adventures waiting for you, and the best way to learn more about what Sterling Travel can do for you is to log on to SterlingTravelInc.com. That's SterlingTravelInc.com. Tell them you heard about it on Grape Encounters Radio.
When you're into wine, the perfect moment can be as simple as a well-chosen bottle, two glasses, and good company. But that perfect moment can be even more special when it includes some very cool accoutrements from EpicStyle.com. Beautiful decanters that are true works of art, preservation systems, extraordinary corkscrews, wildly creative coasters, amazing wine accessories for your table or home bar. And of course, Epic Style's now legendary cork cages. Even a perfect moment can be made a little more perfect with the help of thousands of products from EpicStyle.com.
He's setting down the wine glass and picking up the microphone. Here's your Grape Encounters host, David Wilson.
And time for sipping with Sarah. Sarah, you are probably, I imagine, I've never been in the tasting room with you.
That's true.
But I'm guessing that you are Miss Manners in a tasting room.
Is that true or not? Or do you actually get up on the bar and dance?
I haven't done any bar dancing. I actually like to be a fly on the wall and watch other people in tasting rooms.
Really?
I do.
Okay. So let's talk today about tasting room etiquette.
Okay.
Because, first of all, the tasting room of today is nothing like the tasting room of 20 years
ago.
No,
not at all.
Completely different. And things have loosened up a lot. Because I used to hate to go into tasting rooms because it was like, oh my gosh, I was afraid to open my mouth. Because there was always that guy there who was trying to impress his girlfriend.
And he knew
brought
more
her
than
there
you
in
did.
The Porsche that he rented from the exotic car rental place. And then he would throw out lingo that nobody understood. And that was the last date she ever went on with him.
I think a few people still use wine tasting and visiting wine regions to sort of pump up their egos. But I think that's a smaller and smaller piece of the pie. And most people who go out wine tasting are just seriously interested. And serious is probably the wrong word. They're out to enjoy themselves discovering.
Well, one of the things that has changed in the tasting room world is the word tasting. Because a lot of tasting rooms now offer you the opportunity to buy a glass of wine. And
that's true.
You can go sit out on some beautiful patio, you know, with water trickling in a fountain, and they've created wonderful environments. They have cheese and charcuterie plates that they offer.
Buy the bottle and take it out on
and
the patio.
Yes, that's become a very popular theme. And I do think tasting rooms have become a lot more like, say, Barnes & Noble and Starbucks, in the sense that businesses used to want you to come, spend your money, and go. And now the theme is come and stay as long as you like.
You know, I think there's been so much research on marketing wine through tasting rooms in a way and how people behave in tasting rooms. So behind the business is that wineries make a lot more money on bottles they sell directly to their customers in the tasting room than bottles that go through the distribution system where middlemen get the cuts. So it's become a more and more important part of their business model. And I think that they figured out that the longer people hang out in their space, the more wine they're likely to take away with
them.
Well,
and this is almost going to sound derogatory, but it's really not meant to be. There is a camaraderie, I think, that wineries now are trying to build with their customers, and that naturally translates into wine club members.
Yes, it does.
You know, the people come to like the people that are associated with the winery. And what's not to like? Yeah. Because people who work in wineries tend to be really nice people.
They are nice people.
You know, they got a great job.
And they building relationships is what they're there for.
And why not? And why not join the club? Although I will say this, that before you join the wine club, because a lot of people join wine clubs out of guilt. And a lot of people join wine clubs because they've been to the tasting room, they've enjoyed the wines, and now they're lured in by the 30% discount that they're going to get on that case of wine if they join the wine club and take three deliveries, which is going to totally eat up the 30% discount that you're going to get. So be a little careful of that.
The pressure of the moment is high. That's for sure.
But I'm glad that tasting rooms mostly charge now. Because I'm glad because you know what? No guilt. It's like I paid for it. I paid for the taste. If I don't like the wine, I'm going to go. You don't write my name down. Don't take my picture. Don't badmouth me on Facebook.
I completely agree. I'm happy to pay for tasting. And it's also a way for them to pull out the frat parties and the bridesmaids parties that are just there to party.
A tasting room is not a party room, although a lot of wineries now have places for you to laugh and giggle and have fun and create experiences.
Sure. I actually think one of the great things wineries have learned is that people come for different levels of tasting and experiences, and one size doesn't fit all. I think wineries have figured out that they can have a sit-down guided tasting. They can have a sit-down served but not guided tasting. They can have tasting just at the bar, or they can have a whole food experience. There are a couple of old wineries up in Oregon in the Willamette Valley who have opened these new tasting rooms that offer just tiers of experiences in different spaces, and everybody's having a good time. I'm thinking of Ponzi, old Oregon name, and Sokol Blosser, also an old Oregon name, and they both have just sleek new high design tasting rooms.
A lot of these old wineries are reinventing themselves.
Right, right.
Which is very exciting. All right, let's do this. I want to play a little game with you. So we're going to do tasting room do's and don'ts.
Okay.
And you can say do or don't, and I'll have to give you a do or a don't in a tasting room, okay?
Okay.
Are you ready?
Okay.
Don't.
Don't get drunk.
Oh, absolutely.
That is the worst possible etiquette. That's my number one.
Okay, your turn.
Do.
Spit.
Related to number one.
Yeah, definitely spit. Especially if you don't like it. Look at, you know what? Don't think that because you paid $10 or $20 for the tasting experience that you have to swallow every drop. Don't.
Don't bring your kids and ignore them in the tasting room and let them run around bothering everybody else.
I was going to say don't have kids.
Oh, dear.
You're going to be a wine lover.
No. It's too late for me.
No, sorry. Okay, your turn.
Don't.
Don't brush your teeth, chew gum, gargle, or use cologne when going to a tasting room.
That is four or five good ones. Absolutely.
All true.
All true, especially that scent thing. Don't even wash your hands with scented soap that's going to bother, that put lavender in the neighbor's wine.
Do.
Do treat the people pouring behind the bar as the experts on the wine and not yourself. I've seen so many people belly up to the bar and start asking questions that are just calculated to let everybody in the room know how much they know. And honestly, nobody knows. You may know a lot about wine, but you don't know the specifics of this wine. Trust the people behind the bar. That's
okay.
Right.
All right. I think that was very constructive, Sarah.
I feel instructed.
All right. Very good. All right. That's going to do it for Grape Encounters today. That was fun. Sarah, I say we go wine tasting right now.
I'm ready.
Okay. We'll see y'all next week.
You never know what part of the country or the world the Grape Encounters microphones will take you to. Don't miss a single experience. Your Grape Encounter isn't over. We're just taking a breather until next week's edition.